Item number one, call to order. Welcome, everybody, to our first meeting. To this meeting. And item number two is approval of the draft minutes. So
I move to approve them.
I second. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We're unanimous already. Item number three, proposed stipulation. This is in the matter of Christopher Cooper. I think we all read the facts involving the firefighter, and I believe this is a 50% discount suggestion.
That's right. Good morning, President Levinson. Good morning, commissioners. This case relates to the governmental ethics ordinance, and the proposed penalty of $5,000 is 50% of the available maximum.
Thank you. So it sounds like this is our usual, he was cooperative and we want to incentivize saving resources and saving having to go to an administrative hearing. If my fellow commissioners have any questions on this item.
Just very quickly, did you, in your investigation, did you see any prior actions that were similar that just hadn't been come to light, but did come to light in your investigation that would show more of a pattern?
Commissioner Hockman, our investigations are very thorough. That was one of the chief questions that we sought to answer, and we did not find any evidence that this was part of a pattern or that there were any past acts leading up to this particular incident.
Okay. That's all I had.
Commissioner Murray?
No questions. Thank you.
Okay. So having all reviewed this, I would move to approve the proposed stipulation as presented.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item number four, this is a proposed stipulation involving former Mayor Richard Reardon, who I understand this is one of our 75% recommendations because there's a history of similar violations in the past.
That's right, President Levinson. I'd also like to note that I am joined by Investigator Eric Eusebio, who handled this matter.
May I have a moment to consult with Stone? President Levinson, can we table this particular one until and put this towards the end of the calendar?
Sure.
I need to check on one thing.
Okay, so item number four is going to be tabled for later today?
Yes.
Okay, great. Item number five, another proposed stipulation in the matter of, and do you want to pronounce it, Mr. Perez, to save me?
Definitely. Dominic Rubalcaba.
Exactly how I was going to say it. So this is another proposed 75% of the maximum penalty involving a failure to disclose, I understand, attorney lobbyist, and this is also someone who has a history of prior misconduct.
That's right, President Levinson. Mr. Rubalcaba has previously admitted to violating laws within the jurisdiction of the Ethics Commission on two occasions.
And as I read this, my feeling was we're giving the discount because it saves a great deal of time and resources, but and that's just the deal that we make on these issues.
That's right, President Levinson. It's quite a commitment of resources and staff time to prepare for a hearing. If there is an opportunity for us to reach a settlement that satisfies the goals of the Ethics Commission, which is to provide information to the public when these laws are violated and to ensure that penalties are issued that reflect both an effort to address the fact that law was violated and that we hope that it doesn't happen again, that deterrence effect. All of those reasons push us to seek settlement wherever possible.
So here's my question on this one. It's the old, he does wrong to us once, shame on him, twice shame on us. In addition to the penalties, can we insist on some type of compliance regime that's beyond the normal compliance regime these folks have, which is obviously abiding by the laws, attending our training seminars, et cetera, filling out our forms? Is there something more we can do for this gentleman so that we don't ever have to see him again? Because I don't know if he just views this as the cost of doing business, that every couple years he's going to get caught, he'll write a check and move on, and then just go ahead and do it and repeat. Is there something more we can do to make this a little bit more, to make our rules a little bit more in his face so that he doesn't have to every couple of years show up in front of us and write a check?
Commissioner Hockman, through my conversations with Mr. Rubalcaba in our investigation, it became very clear to me that Mr. Rubalcaba was as disappointed in himself as we were, that he was coming up for another enforcement investigation that ultimately found that he had violated the law. The penalty that is in front of you today is actually quite an escalation from the previous penalties that he's received. In 2007, when he agreed to a negotiated settlement, he paid a penalty of $3,000, where the maximum available there was $20,000. That amounts to only 15% of the maximum. In 2008, he paid a penalty of $1,000, where the maximum penalty was $5,000, which is 20% of the available penalty. Clearly, those weren't enough of a deterrent. We are here again today, but I believe that the 75%, which is a total penalty of $15,000, along with the conversations that I've had with Mr. Rubalcaba, the understanding now that he has reached the end of his rope means that we won't be dealing with this again. As to whether the commission today or in the future can order any other kind of penalty that exceeds the requirements that are laid out in the law, that is something that I would have to look into to determine whether that is in conversation with the city attorney's office to determine whether or not that is within the powers of the Ethics Commission.
Well, it's a stipulation. So you're right. We might not be able to order it if mm-hmm. he wanted to go to a contested hearing and we were faced with our battery of penalties that we could order. But it's a stipulation. And if you tell him that, look, we require you to go through twice, semi-annual training, we require you to get your reports in 2 weeks early, or that you give us an additional certification every time you submit a report, or whatever you can creatively think that might work in this case. If he voluntarily stipulates to it, then he voluntarily stipulates to it. That's up to maybe not force it, but he can absolutely voluntarily stipulate to it, Again, we haven't really encountered this problem because so many of the ones we've had over the last year, probably even several years that I've been here, are first-time offenders. But, we need some additional type of compliance regime that they need to abide by if they become second offenders, because obviously the money didn't work, and even the percentage of the money, I don't think that was, unless you can tell us that when you spoke to him, he said, you know what? The 1,000 or 3,000 just never got through my head. It just wasn't enough to really make it, put it on my radar. You need to penalize me 75%, and that'll make the difference. I doubt he said that. I doubt you had a conversation like that. So now we're just trying to actually help him, and for that matter, help anyone who gets into a repeat situation to put a little extra on them to make sure they don't have a third or a fourth time with us.
Commissioner Hockman, the Enforcement Division is all about helping people and avoiding these kinds of violations in the future. You're raising a couple of interesting ideas that I do think that I certainly think merit exploration, specifically as to the non-monetary penalties that I wouldn't even call them penalties, the non-monetary actions that we can require through a negotiated...
Compliance action.
That's right, compliance actions. I want to make sure that if we do step into an arena that involves non-monetary penalties, that there is an enforcement mechanism on the back end in case compliance isn't readily obtained, meaning it's easy to seek out enforcement of a negotiated settlement that requires payment if that payment isn't proffered. We have a couple of well-established routes we can take in those instances. I want to make sure that I understand the ramifications of a respondent that signs on to an agreement with non-monetary actions being required, what we do if those actions aren't actually complied with. I think in the future, these are questions that I will have addressed, and you may see a stipulation and exhibit where appropriate with the kinds of compliance measures that you are articulating. For this one, Mr. Rubalcaba has expressed to me the true disappointment that comes with the fact that he's having to acknowledge publicly that he has violated the law yet again. And I do think that the penalty, both the amount and percentage, weigh heavily on him. It wasn't something that he was happy about. Most people usually aren't happy when they have to pay a penalty of any type. So I think that the stipulation and exhibit as presented here today is sufficient and merits your support. But I do think you are raising several interesting concepts that I will explore.
As long as we're on the topic of giving you more work to explore more concepts for us, which I imagine is one of your favorite things, one of the things that I have kind of asked of the enforcement ad hoc subcommittee is to think about how we structure these penalties while being consistent and while, you know, continuing to endeavor to be as fair as possible. And I know that one of the things that I've said is that I'm not entirely comfortable with always starting with the worst case scenario, the maximum penalty. But perhaps what we could explore at some point, maybe before Commissioner Hochman has to cycle off because of term limits, is what are there other options other than monetary penalties? And so maybe there's a way that we can all kind of have our cake and, you know, eat it too, where there's some ability to have a little bit of discretion between the 100, 75, 50, and maybe that comes in the form of some non-monetary sticks, so to speak. But I wonder if we could have maybe a menu of those so that we're sure that those fall consistently within our rubric. So it doesn't just become, you know, today we don't like this person, because I know, you know, Commissioner Hochman contributed greatly to having a much more consistent enforcement rubric that we use. So, you know, maybe there are some other options where there's a kind of a 50% plus these things that you're not going to enjoy so much, but we think will have a deterrent effect.
And I'll offer one up that I've used myself in actually representing people in criminal proceedings. One of the number one goals of these proceedings is deterrence, to basically send a message to the community that if you do this and you get caught, bad things can happen to you. Part of the success of deterrence is getting the word out that this can happen. And we obviously try to do that through our own website. We try and do that to the extent that local media covers our actions. But that's pretty much the limitations that we have. Unless it's part of your little goodie bag as to what you're going to require people to do in the future, they have to affirmatively go on social media, whether their own website, take out a website, take an ad in the LA Times, whatever you decide might be an appropriate sanction, fully accept responsibility or at least acknowledge that they've entered into a stipulation and that they're going to pay this, however you've, you know, devised the word of the stipulation, but take it upon themselves to popularize their situation. And you're right, that might be something if, you know, they can say, look, I'll do it, instead of a 75% penalty, I'll spend $2,500 taking out an ad in the LA Times, or I'll set up a website that I'll then link in, or I'll go on Facebook or social media and I'll try and get, and I've got, 100,000 people that follow me on my Twitter account, and I'll let them all know what I'm going through. So it just might, to the extent that we can start leveraging other things, as President Levinson talks about, that are not necessarily, they're non-monetary, but actually might even do better to get our message out, that could be something we could consider.
I must say I do like the suggestion about some sort of additional training or taking some sort of class. Because I'm not sure, with this case and the other cases we've seen, I'm not quite sure what the problem is. But and we could table the discussion about Mayor Reardon until Commissioner is ready to talk about it or ready to discuss that particular matter. But I do think that that's a great suggestion about some sort of training. And I'm not sure exactly what the issue is. People just don't know. They're lazy. They don't understand. But that is something that I think we should definitely explore, as opposed to just paying the money, because these people, they get very hefty fees for being lobbyists and the like. And so $15,000, to you or I, may be prohibitive. It may not be prohibitive to somebody who's making well into the six figures.
So I think our question I think our question for today is, these stipulations were entered into the current regime where we didn't have this, potential additional penalties that we could levy. And I know that we have not currently in the last 4 minutes had a full vetting with the city attorney of what those potential penalties may be. So I think I hear from all of us that if there could be an exploration of, what else can you do? I think additional training might be very useful. I know that you have put a lot of energy already in the front end of kind of preventative care. And so maybe what we're seeing is still stipulations being entered into under an old regime of, take vitamin C, but not take all your multivitamins. So maybe we'll be seeing less of these where it is, somewhat inexplicable why this continues to happen. But I think that our question for today is, are we comfortable essentially asking you to explore, obviously, constitutional possibilities that would work within our current framework, but with approving these stipulations?
Commissioners, I appreciate all of your words, and I will certainly explore the different menu options that may be available with regards to restitution that can be asked of respondents in the future. There will be some issues that will pop up, but I think that each of the proposals that have been floated merits a look. And I do want to make sure that we always keep an eye on what we do if someone fails to satisfy the terms of a settlement that they've entered into. So what happens when a respondent agrees to issue an advertisement in the LA Times and it never happens? Will we get a state judge to compel that kind of action? And those are questions that we'll need to answer. However, I do believe that the stipulations and exhibits that are up for consideration today merit your approval. The regime that we've been operating under is one that has had the support of the commission, one that has been formulated with the commission's input in mind, and one that has led to a particularly active enforcement period over the last 2 years. This agenda is notable because it actually includes matters that span each of the substantive areas that the Ethics Commission operates in, both campaign finance, municipal lobbying, and the governmental ethics ordinance. So I want to make sure if we are addressing the penalty approach that we've had in these matters, that we are actually clear on what problem we are trying to solve and what solutions will solve that particular problem. I do want to make sure that we end up with a system that allows for consistency that satisfies the deterrence effect that we've discussed here today, and three, that shows that the Ethics Commission is serious about the areas that it operates in. I think the approach that we've had over, while I've been here with the Ethics Commission over the last 2 years, and which predates me, is one that has been successful. We have managed to reach settlement in a great number of the violations that we have identified through our investigations. And the only matter that has come up to hearing, which was at, in February of this year, is an outlier, meaning the approach that we've had has actually led to what we wanted, which is consistency, and I do believe a strong deterrent effect. The violations, the past violations associated with items number 4 and 5 are the product, I think, in part of a more lax, less predictable approach to penalties, which did not provide the kind of deterrent factor that the current approach actually does.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm always glad to have the conversation of how we can improve our enforcement regime. And so, but I think as to the matters before us today, you know, these are essentially arm's length contracts that are entered into, and it's up to us to decide whether to approve them or not. I think under the regime that everyone's been operating under, to me, this looks like a consistent application of our enforcement philosophy. So I would ask my fellow commissioners if there's any more questions on item number 6.
No, I move to approve the proposed stipulation as presented. I think we're in item.
It's item, yeah, item
oh,
number.
Oh, I apologize. Item number 5.
In item number 5.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. It is approved. And now we actually turn to item number 6. Do we want to continue to table?
Yeah.
Okay. Item number 6.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Perez. Look at you, so old school with your notebook.
Leftovers from the DOJ.
So who exactly paid for that you're now using on your city time? Just no.
Our laws cover only the misuse of city resources.
Oh, city resources. Interesting distinction that we've decided to make there. You're being such a lawyer, reading those terms very narrowly. Okay. Ms. Pryor, welcome. Wait, this is your last?
Yeah. This is my last day. So
this is your last day?
Yeah, this is my last day.
On a Tuesday?
Yes.
Did you hold over just for us?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, well, thank you.
Got to finish it with a commission meeting.
Well, we are going out with a bang with quote-unquote technical amendments.
Yeah.
And I understand that these are essentially just bringing us to be consistent with changes that happen through state law and the FPPC, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
They just modified their law to have these ticket distribution disclosure forms be posted on governmental entities' websites rather than filed directly with them, because I'm assuming they were overwhelmed.
That makes sense. So I have no questions about the technical amendments. All right.
No.
I would move that we approve the amendments in the report.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
But before you go, thank you so much. It's
thank
been a pleasure.
So it has truly been a pleasure working with the commission and meeting all the commissioners. And thank you so much.
But
thank
we're
you for your time.
Makeup of the commission, right?
What's that?
We're
yes,
your
you
favorite.
Are my favorite.
Right.
And I would like to add my thanks to Ms. Pryor that she's. She makes the trains run on time, and I very much approved it. Her knowledge, her intimate knowledge of how to fill out these forms, which even for commissioners can be somewhat baffling, has been enormously helpful. So thank you very much for all your hard work.
And good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for keeping us off the front page of the LA Times with our Form 700.
I will hand the baton over to my capable colleagues and making sure that you guys file. And
but I assume you'll be here for the next meeting just for fun.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, right, uh-huh. Right. Thank you very much. Thanks. We really appreciate it. Are all the old and new staff, not everyone has started yet. This is coming up, but.
We have one new staff member who is present right today that we can acknowledge, Nathan Hardy, our new policy director. But we have two investigators who will be coming on board May 3rd.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. We have a public comment for item number 7. Ms. Dougherty? Sure. I have no problem with that. Okay. Item number seven involves one of our recusal of reviews. And we are again back to our significant and continuing question. I don't know that we have any questions, but I think the public would like to hear a quick discussion. So if you wouldn't mind summarizing for
us. So this is item number seven, recusal review of Alana Yanez, member of the Board of Animal Services Commissioners. For this item, staff recommends a finding that Commissioner Yanez does not have a significant and continuing conflict of interest at this time, and that the resolution in attachment D be adopted. However, if you feel that she does have a significant and continuing conflict, a divestment must be ordered, and the resolution in attachment E may be adopted for that purpose. As you are aware, the city charter requires that any time a commissioner recuses themselves due to a financial interest three or more times in a 365-day period, we are required to review those recusals to examine the nature of the conflict causing the recusals to determine if a significant and continuing conflict exists. If so, our remedy under the charter is to order that the interest causing the conflict be divested. When conducting a review, we look at the continuing nature of the recusals and the significance of the recusals. To do so, we take into account whether the commissioner is likely to hold the interest causing the conflicts for the foreseeable future, whether the subject matter before the board is likely to continue, whether the recusals have any negative effects on the city or the public, and whether the recusals have negatively affected the commissioner's ability to discharge her city duties.
So this seems like what we usually see, which is continuing but not significant.
Yes.
And just based on the kind of percentage and impact, it seems to me that there was wisdom in finding that this is not significant.
That's correct.
And I understand that these mostly come before us because it kind of triggers the continuing flag. And then we have to make a determination as to whether it's significant. And again, in looking at it, it seemed to me that the recommendation was correct and that it was not. But if my fellow commissioners have any questions before we hear from public comment.
I don't have any questions.
No questions.
Okay.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good morning. I'm Phyllis Storti. If you've heard my name, it's probably because I'm a writer for City Watch. So I write about these things a lot. So my being here is not any indication that it's necessarily anything wrong. If it were that bad, I would be writing about it first.
are now terrified. Thank you.
Yeah. But I do attend all of the Animal Services Commission meetings because I'm active in this area. And there are two commissioners on that, well, now three, on that board that are openly involved in various aspects of animal advocacy. Of course, HSUS, Humane Society of the United States, is one of the largest, and Ms. Yanez is directly hired by them. It's not that she is doing anything wrong, but it is a little uncomfortable sometimes in the fact that, for instance, just now they have taken a vote in which she was very, very active to allow anyone to self-identify to be able to use city vouchers. And the city vouchers have been designated from the beginning when Joel Wax put them in to be used for only low income and that people would have to identify themselves in some way to prove that they are and city residents. I'm concerned that the rules on that have not been made specific enough and that her lobbying for this, actually bringing it in, since she has a program that strictly utilizes city vouchers in low-income areas, and that is how HSUS has its presence in this aspect of animal advocacy in the city.
Could you clarify, sorry, you said the rules on this in terms of when she needs to recuse herself, whether she can act?
Well, since she's working with low-income people, and that's very admirable, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, should she be involved in the passage of a motion, which is right now going before the City Council, I don't believe it's gone there yet, that says these people do not have to have any form of identification that proves that they are low income. We can go ahead and issue them vouchers just because they say they're low income. And that's pretty iffy because it's a small step to where people that don't own animals are just now spaying and neutering feral cats and strays and so forth, which is a violation of a legal injunction against the city. And I just believe that perhaps this is going a little too far. We have three, I'd like to say. One is new, but another one that has already crossed the line, and what did stop him was my article. And I'm not sure that it stopped, and I'll probably be writing again, but it stopped that particular aspect. So I'm just concerned about where the line is that the commissioners should be recusing themselves, if it should be at any time that there's the involvement of money and expenditures that would assist them in a program that does bring donations to their organization.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that issue is whether they're clear on when to recuse is distinct from the issue before us as to whether that this is significant. So I think that's very helpful in terms of our action on this item. I think it is distinct and separate apart from whether or not we find within our code that it falls within these two terms, continuing, which certainly it seems like it is, and significant, which it seems like it is not, but that doesn't discount any of the issues that you brought before us, which we appreciate.
Well, it does contribute certainly to the employment of the person outside of the city.
Yes.
And I'm a former city employee myself, and I've been a commission secretary. So I'm well aware of how the rules work and how cautious you have to be. And I just believe that maybe this entire commission, is lending a little bit too much to where advocacy is overtaking the goal of commissioner, which is to be the eyes and ears of the public in guarding their trust.
We thank you for your comment.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. So I feel more educated on what is happening in that commission. We thank you. In terms of the narrow question before us, I continue to feel that this does not rise to the level of being significant under our law.
I would agree with that. And as such, unless any other commissioners have any other questions, I'd move to adopt the resolution attachment D to item number 7.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
And it passes. Another recusal review. You're with us for a while today.
Yes.
But we're actually moving on to our information items. And so I think it's been our practice as of late to take the information items on consent, although I would love for us to have a moment for our outgoing staffers to come up and say thank you. So, but before we do that, we still have an action item.
May I have a moment?
Of course.
President Levinson, I'd ask you to take item number 4 off calendar for today and reschedule it for our next regularly scheduled commission hearing.
Okay. I have no problem doing that. I assume that you've consulted that there aren't time.
Yeah, and let me explain the reason. After consulting with the city attorney's office, I believe I'm going to have to recuse myself from it. And since we don't have an additional commissioner to give a three vote, if three votes were going to be attained, if I'm recused.
You're a stickler for the quorum, aren't you?
And we're a stickler for the quorum issue on that issue. I'd ask that you continue this action item for our next meeting.
I think that is the wise course. So let's do that.
You don't need to actually take an action to do
okay.
that, since there won't be.
We're inacting.
You're not acting.
Okay.
We're failing to act like so many other levels of government. Okay. So not ours, of course. We're on to our information items, which, as I've said, it's been our recent practice that we take these on consent, but I did want to hear if there are any questions on any of the items. You know, certainly this is our moment to have a discussion.
So, one second, just to make sure that I didn't put any notes
in. Should we have the, so that Commissioner Murray doesn't rush, should we have our outgoing staffers come up?
Yes, well, and well, Shannon Pryor is our one outgoing staffer today.
Right.
In addition, we can also introduce you to some new staff. We have a permanent new staffer, which I mentioned, Nathan Hardy. We also have some new as-needed staff who are temporary employees who are on board to help us through heavy workload periods. Is Shannon still here? Oh, yes, I see her. Okay.
Heavy work at the Ethics Commission?
Oh, you have no idea.
We've merely asked Mr. Perez to redo the entire enforcement.
Yeah.
That can't take
exactly.
Very long.
Exactly. So Nathan Hardy is our new policy director, if you want to stand up and everybody in the room can see you. He has been on board for 1 week, yep. And he's still coming back to work, so I think that's a good sign. Yes, his first day he was stuck for 20 minutes in one of the elevators. So, yeah, which I know is probably not great news for you.
Oh my God.
Lucky I was.
But we also have some of our temporary staff, I think, are here. Christopher Guerrero, would each of you stand so we can recognize you? Gracie, and oh my goodness, Gracie, I'm so sorry, I'm forgetting your last name. Gallegos, thank you. And Lindsay David, is Lindsay here? Yes. So these folks are on board to help us in a temporary capacity
right.
Through the end of the fiscal year, and they've right. Been very instrumental. And we can certainly bring Shannon back up if you would like to say more.
Well, I think Ms. Pryor probably has had enough
yes.
of us for a lifetime. But when we start levying penalties on Facebook, I hope you'll friend us as the commission. And follow us on Twitter, #@EthicsCommission.
President Levinson, with respect to item 13, which is the executive director's report, I don't know if it was sort of buried in there, but I figured we'd start asking since the 2017 elections are coming, which is going to trigger the whole matching grant program, which then triggers how much money we have in it. And I don't know if you know this, the numbers generally off the top of your head, but are we doing fine? Do we have to worry about this? Is this going to be just sort of very standard approvals when that comes before us?
We are doing fine. The projections are that we will have, over the course of the next fiscal year, we'll have a balance of about $14 million in the trust fund, which will be sufficient for the next elections. There are a lot of incumbent races in 2017, so not a lot of open seats, which reduces the competitiveness of the elections, reduces the number of candidates who might qualify to receive funding. So we don't have any concerns at this point at all about being able to fund all qualified candidates at the maximum.
Okay.
So, were you in the elevator alone?
About 20 minutes. Pardon me, about 20 minutes, actually. Well, long.
Alone?
Alone, yes.
Oh, gosh. Well, this has been truly terrifying. Commissioner Murray.
No questions.
All right. So, if there are any therapists in the room for public comment, any public comments? At all? I didn't see any additional cards. Okay. Announcements and requests to schedule items. My understanding is that now we will get some more policy proposals coming our way regarding disclosure. But
yes.
Of course, a few moments in the elevator does not a proposal make.
Yes, exactly. And the lobbying laws also are on the immediate horizon for review as well. So yes, we're very pleased to have Nathan on board.
Great. Okay. Closing.
Oh, I have one question.
Oh, please.
Is there an update on the appointment of the hearing officer on the item from our last commission meeting?
Sergio Perez, Director of Enforcement. Commissioner Murray, the matter has been referred to the Office of Administrative Hearings with the State of California. A hearing has been scheduled to initiate on September 26, 2016. And we also have a scheduled pre-hearing conference in June and July of this year.
And has a person hasn't been appointed. It's been referred to the office, but they have a person has not been appointed. Is that correct?
A judge is currently working through setting case management and case schedules, but we have not received the name of the individual who will actually be hearing the matter.
Thank you.
Okay. I think we should call the meeting to a close. Thank you, and whoever's going to be riding the elevator down with me, I'll see you at the door. All right, thank you very much, everybody.